some of you will be glad to hear, this is the final of our Exodus series. Yes, I saw some hands go up. Yes, we're finally finishing this up. The title of this final in the Exodus sermon series is Promises, Promises. Well, we began our sermon series on the Exodus recognizing that the Exodus begins with a promise. A promise that God will set God's people free. That reality, that promise has sustained not only generations of Jews, but Christians as well. In the promise from God that we can overcome all things if we have the love of God, in the assurance of biblical stories like the Exodus, where God delivers God's chosen to the promised land, we are meant to find great comfort and confidence. Now, because of this confidence that God will set us free from the things that enslave us, free from ourselves and each other, Jews have had faith in the midst of the horrors of the Holocaust. The first African Americans endured the atrocities of slavery, and even people who are caught up in addictions to alcohol or drugs are able to believe that there is a higher power that's willing to help see them through to the other side. You see, Israel's story, the story of a people who are trapped, oppressed, enslaved, Israel's story is our story. To varying degrees, we are all trapped, oppressed, enslaved. You see, we all have our own personal Egypts. We are all slaves to something. It can be alcohol, drugs, or overeating. Piety, political platforms, or pettiness. Biases, belligerence, or bad attitudes. Slothfulness, stubbornness, or sinfulness. We are all slaves to something. We all slaves to our own personal pharaohs that rule our lives and sap away the lives that God intends for us, the life that God desires for us. We have to take this Exodus story, the Exodus story, we need to take it to heart and begin our own personal journeys through the desert wildernesses of our Egypts into the promised land where God has better days waiting for each of us. Before we go any further, I want us all to sort of acknowledge that part of our lives, that part that we sometimes feel that we can't quite escape, the part that's always weary from the journey, the part that cries out in the silences of life for a better way, the part that dreams of a future that's not only better, but is better because it shares the love of God. Those of us who grew up in church, we hear the Exodus story before kindergarten and then on and on for the rest of our lives. And something in us, even from that very early age, something in us connects with this story. It's hopeful and at the same time, it's expectant. Even after hearing it for the first time and we learn of the ending of entering into the promised land, we still love to hear the story. And it may be precisely because we know the ending, maybe precisely because we know the ending, that we do love still to hear the story. Because knowing the ending adds to the anticipation of the ending. We can read it expectantly, resting in the assurance that God will save God's own. Now here's the thing. I think there's a problem with that, with resting in the assurance that God will save God's own. The problem's twofold and both parts relate to each other. The first problem is that because of the assurance, because of the certitude of God saving us, we all too often find ourselves resting. Resting from being so tired from the things that we've already done for God. Resting from working towards a closer relationship with God because we sort of feel like we're already getting close enough to God. Resting instead of getting out into the world and doing the things that God has clearly asked us to do. Resting in the promises of God. Now, the second problem is the assumption that we bring to the statement. Our assumption comes in the form of a deception, a self-deception, that we are God's people, the ones whom God will deliver. You see, hitting within the text that Kelly just read for us is an implication. It implies that God's people will act in a certain way, that they will constantly strive for a certain kind of life, that they will be a certain way. And it also implies exactly what that certain way is. And it says it is not hard to understand. Many of you are probably familiar with the writings of Robert Fulghum. And even those who don't recognize the name would probably know his most famous book, All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Now, the premise of his book is stated very clearly in the title. It's the idea that we sometimes overcomplicate life and that all we really need to know to be a good person are the things that a kindergartner understands. Things like share everything, play fair, don't hit, put things back where you found them, clean up your own mess. And when you go out into the world, watch out for traffic, hold hands, and stick together. It's really that hard to understand what God wants from us. This was the question that Moses put before the people of Israel in Deuteronomy, and it's the question that I put before you now. The nature and ways of God might be mysterious, but God's code of ethics and the worship that we are to offer up are not that mysterious. Both were clearly laid out before us and them. In saying, surely this commandment that I am commanding you today is not too hard for you, nor is it too far away, Moses is saying, essentially, these things, this certain way of being really isn't all that hard to understand. Even a kindergartner could understand it. I'm afraid the truth that I'm trying to get at when I suggest that we're deceiving ourselves when we rest assured in the promise that God will deliver God's people is that if we are expecting, if we are hoping to find our own promised land, well, we better start acting like it. And the thing is, as Moses is suggesting here, and quite frankly, as Robert Fulghum suggested thousands of years later, it really isn't that hard for us to understand what God wants from us. Yet all too often, while we understand what God wants, we sometimes fail to succeed at living lives that convey the love of God. What I'm suggesting isn't that we should or even can, quite frankly, lead some kind of perfect life. Let's face it, if we did that, I'd probably be out of a job. The reality is that we just can't live perfect lives. We're not ultimately capable of being everything that God calls us to be, everything that God desires for us to be in our lives. What I'm suggesting is that just because we can't be everything we're called to be, we shouldn't stop trying. We shouldn't stop trying to be better people. We shouldn't stop trying to be the kind of people that we know we are called to be. We want to claim to be seekers of God. We need to start acting like it. You see, just like God made promises to us through the Bible, when we become Christians, we make a promise to God. We promise to constantly strive to be the people we are called to be. When we work on those promises, when we strive to be the people that we are called to be rather than resting in the promises, when we do that, God has something in store for us. Something beyond everything we have ever imagined. I'd like to read a few more selected verses from Deuteronomy. This comes from chapter 34, a few verses between 1 and 12. Then Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite of Jericho, and the Lord showed him the entire land. The Lord said to him, this is the land of Jericho I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your own eyes, he said to Moses, but you shall not cross over there. Then Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab at the Lord's command. He was buried in a valley in the land of Moab, opposite of Beth Peor, but no one knows the burial place to this day. Moses was 120, I love this line. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His sight was unimpaired and his vigor had not abated. The Israelites wept for Moses in the plains of Moab for 30 days. Then the period of mourning for Moses was ended. Never since has there arisen a prophet in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. He was unequaled for all of the signs of wonder that the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh and all of his servants and the entire land, and for all the mighty deeds and all the terrifying displays of power that Moses performed in the sight of all of Israel. The Exodus story is a story for the ages. It's a story of God's people, all of God's people. And in it there is a promise. The promise that God's people, you, them, all will be okay. The journey may be long and at times it may be difficult, but God will help with every step of the way. And if you're willing to walk with God, if you're willing to live into the promises of your baptism, there is the promise of a better life. Not just for you, but for the lives of all the people whose paths you cross. So you see, we have to stop sitting still. We have to stop resting in the promises and start working toward the promises. We have to stop saying we are the people of God and get to the business of being the people of God. But let me tell you, it's worth it. It is worth it because God does promise it will lead to a better life. And as the people of Israel learn through their journey, there is a road that we must travel. There is a promise that we must make. That promise is the promise of our baptisms, and it is the only honest way to answer the promise God makes to give us hope and to give us a future. Promises, promises. God's promises, our promises. And when the two come together, nothing is impossible. And even this land can be transformed into the promised land flowing with milk and honey. I'd like to end with my version of what I imagine Moses' last address to the people must have been like. I hope you'll hear it as if you were there, as if Moses was allowing God to speak through him directly to you. As he looked back over their journey from the chariots that tried to run them down to the grumblings in the wilderness journey, I believe Moses probably recognized our need to act like the people of God. And I believe he saw that how we do that was something even the youngest person could understand. I believe Moses may have said something like this before he passed away on the top of Mount Pisgah. Love one another. Share with one another. Play fair. Don't hit. Put things back where you found them. Clean up after your own mess. When you go out into the world, watch out for traffic, hold hands, and stick together.